You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we chat about WWE's Over the Limit, The Big Show's Meltdown, TNA's Sacrifice pay-per-view, Robert Roode, the original Mr. Wonderful Professional Wrestling, Rock Riddle, and a whole lot more. My name is David, and I am joined today by my good friend Alex, who is now the official co-host of OWW Radio. How you doing today, Alex?
I'm doing outstanding, and I look forward to recording audio with you for the foreseeable future, David.
And just for the record, Jamie is no longer able to record the show. He moved and took a new job, and so his new duties preclude his ability to join us each week. I do want to thank Jamie at the top here for his contributions to getting OWW Radio back on the air. So we will miss him, but Alex, it is excellent to have you here with us each week.
Yeah, I look forward to doing these podcasts with you, David. I love having you as a guest on my show, and I look forward to recording these shows with you.
Well, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss today, so should we get started?
Let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. WWE's Over the Limit pay-per-view is this weekend. Did they do enough these past few weeks to make you want to buy the show, to make you want to pay to see it? Well, they didn't do enough for me, Alex. I always view these kind of pay-per-views, the Over the Limits, you know, as their secondary pay-per-views. I'm okay missing it this weekend. Is it something you've got to tune in to see?
You know, what's funny is I actually made a joke about this on the podcast that I record after Raw, the Raw Reaction for AngryRemarks.com. I said this was an excellent go-home show for the SummerSlam pay-per-view, but unfortunately SummerSlam isn't this Sunday.
Right.
I thought the opening segment did a good job of building up the future match between Brock Lesnar and Triple H.
Yes.
I didn't really get a good feeling about any of the matches going over the limit.
I'm not a big fan of fatal four-ways, by the way, for championship belts. I think it's such an easy way for the champion to lose. And I like when people hold on to titles for a while. Do you like the fatal four-way for Sheamus' title?
Absolutely not. I mean, originally it seemed like we were going to get Alberto Del Rio versus Sheamus, which unfortunately because of the rise of Daniel Bryan, I think the title situation on SmackDown isn't very interesting right now.
Sure.
It seems like we're building toward one match, and then we inserted two other guys. So there's a little bit of intrigue there to see why they inserted the other guys. Maybe they have new plans. But as far as a match that I'm actually interested in seeing, though, I'm not interested to see that match. But what's interesting is when Randy Orton and Sheamus face off, you can kind of hear the crowd buzz. So it makes you kind of wonder if at SummerSlam maybe they'll do a Randy Orton-Sheamus match.
And that's interesting. And, yeah, it does seem like that when the two of them get in each other's faces, that does get people to sit on the edge of their seat. And maybe they will go in that direction. Actually, I like that much better than that rumor where it was going to be Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton.
Absolutely. I mean, Randy Orton kind of has that anti-Cena aura about him. I don't think he's nearly as popular as Cena. I mean, you go to live events, and he doesn't quite get the reaction Cena gets. But, I mean, he kind of has that aura of a bad guy who can do something, you know, kind of dastardly to take you out, even though he's looked at as the good guy. So, Orton versus Sheamus, it might be an interesting match.
Now, one thing we're going to see on Sunday is John Cena versus John Laurinaitis, and we talked about this last week, these authority figure matches. This is not something I find all that interesting.
I mean, John Laurinaitis had his big run, 94-95, for All Japan Pro Wrestling. And last time I looked, it's 2012.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be smoke and mirrors. It's going to be a lot of interference, I assume. There's nothing much more really to say about it.
Well, you know, the shame for me with the Divas title is I'm a huge Beth Phoenix fan, as you know. I love Layla as well. They're probably my two favorite Divas of all time. And I think the build for this match has been so poorly done, like a lot of what we've seen with the Divas lately, that I'm not even that excited for this match. I wish I was, because, I love the both of them. My last point on this, Alex, I wanted to ask you is, do you think WWE should discount these what I would call secondary pay-per-views and maybe to get a better buy rate?
Absolutely. I believe that for a long time. I mean, everyone's going to buy WrestleMania no matter what the price point is. But for these ancillary shows that aren't the big four, I would highly suggest knocking them down in price. What's interesting is Vince McMahon addressed that at the latest investors meeting, and he said that he didn't see that as a viable option. But I think a lot of fans feel that the pay-per-views are too expensive.
The Big Show was fired by John Laurinaitis this past Monday on Raw, which caused Show to melt down in the middle of the ring. Alex, I like to see my giants, my monsters of professional wrestling, angry and busting stuff up. I don't like to see them in the middle of the ring crying. I will say, I thought Big Show did a good job with the material given to him, but that's not my idea of good booking. What is your opinion on what we saw with Big Show Monday night?
Well, actually, I want to pose a question to you. What I found very interesting is that a lot of people were very outraged about this angle. And something that I don't think a lot of people talked about before the angle is that Big Show's been a lovable character for many years now.
Yeah.
He's very happy and jolly, waving to the fans. Do you think a lot of this outrage came because a lot of us were sucked into the Big Show character, maybe not realizing it, because he has been happy and jolly for so many years?
That's a good question. I think, though, the outrage really is we just don't want to see big people, big monsters, you know, show vulnerability in this kind of entertainment. Look, when Karma last year got in the middle of the ring and started crying, I felt very off-put by that as well. Here she'd been destroying Divas for a few weeks, and then next thing you know, she's in the middle of the ring crying. To me, you know, it just doesn't add up to me. I don't really care for it. Am I off base with that?
No, actually, you know, I felt a gamut of emotions actually on Monday. I mean, that is the one angle that I definitely remember, along with the closing angle where Cena made a fool of himself.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is not how I want the Big Show character to be portrayed, and that's not what I want to see. It's very interesting because it seems like he almost has to turn heel now, because after he got on his knees on multiple occasions for John Laurinaitis, begged for his job back, it seems like this has to all be a ruse and he's going to attack Cena on Sunday.
I'm also not a big fan of your fired storylines anymore. I mean, we just know too much about the business. You know, we know now who really is and who really is not leaving a promotion. And if I were Big Show, I'd have said, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go to TNA. I mean, I think that would have been kind of – see, I would have liked that. If he would have said that on national television, you know what, you want to fire me, I'll go to the competitor.
that would have been an interesting storyline, and I absolutely agree with you. I mean, it's kind of hard – to suck, I guess, the internet fans in, because we can go to the internet, but going to live events, I wouldn't doubt if a lot of fans maybe did think sometime these guys get fired. I mean, the fans at live events, a large percentage of them aren't always on the internet.
Yeah.
So maybe this angle is still effective for them. But for me, yeah, I agree. A firing angle doesn't really get me like it used to.
But is that the case, though? Really? I mean, people, because I hear this a lot, well, you know, the WWE doesn't pander to the internet crowd. Most people don't. Really? I mean, it's everyone's on the internet. I mean, I don't care if you're 10 years old. You know, people are on the internet, and if you're wrestling fans, it's so easy to get wrestling information. Is that true?
You know, David, I mean, I think for a lot of quote-unquote hardcore wrestling fans, I think wrestling is a big part of their life, and they do spend time daily, whether it be 20, 30 minutes, to look up wrestling news and information. But, I mean, there's a lot of aspects of my life where I don't go searching for the insides of, like, the NBA or even my local sports scene. So while you may be a fan of it, you may not be a hardcore invested fan. I mean, there's only two things I search for stuff on the internet. That's UFC and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see there being a large fan base that doesn't go out actively searching this stuff.
A listener of the show asked if we would talk about Kofi Kingston and whether he's always going to be stuck in the mid-card of WWE. Of course, this past Monday night, involved in another tag team match, unquestionably, Alex, I think Kofi Kingston is a sensational talent, but the way it's been with him the last couple years, maybe so. Maybe Kofi Kingston is always going to be stuck in the mid-card. Seems that way to me. What does it seem like to you?
Well, it seems like we're going to have our first disagreement here on the radio. Since Kofi Kingston first debuted with the company, he was very athletic, but a very clunky wrestler.
Hmm.
He doesn't look very natural in there. He wouldn't be a smooth dance partner, per se. And while he's improved leaps and bounds, and depending on who he's in there with, he can have a very good professional wrestling match. That's undeniable. But this Monday on Raw, when he was in there with The Miz, again, it was very clunky, very bad. Some of the things he does doesn't look crisp and sharp, like, you know, wrestlers at that level. I would like to see Kofi improve his in-ring before he got pushed to that next level. And remember, that was Randy Orton's complaint about him when
right,
he didn't go to the next level when he was wrestling Randy Orton.
is he mislabeled as a high flyer in that regard? Then you're saying, because yeah, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of flashy, got some high spots, but his real work rate, his real wrestling talent is maybe a step below, a par below.
I spent a very short time doing professional wrestling, about a year, and then someone told me one time that, you know, you can do a lot of stuff in the ring, but if it doesn't look good, then don't do it.
Uh-huh.
And so you'll see a lot of guys throw forearms or punches or, you know, there's little moves that people do that they work on really hard and they're really good at, and that's what they do in the ring. Kofi does a lot of things in the ring that look very athletic and very stunning, but, I mean, they look bad. I mean, some of his leapfrogs are just real bad. I don't know if he gets really excited or he just looks really clunky. Those are the things that I'm able to see. Now, if you're in close or actually wrestling with him, there's probably things you're feeling, and that might make Kofi a little bit worse. You know, Kofi, like I said earlier, he's a good professional wrestler, but some of the stuff he does clunky, and then I don't know if we want our top guys wrestling like that.
Well, is Kofi Kingston then, in your opinion, too high on the card?
No, I wouldn't say that because, I mean, Kofi, you got to give him something to strive for. I mean, he's over with the crowd.
Yeah. Is that part because they market him so well, and he's got the fireworks and the T-shirts?
You know, I mean that's a good argument as well. I mean, that is a completely good argument as well. I mean, I've just never been too high on Kofi Kingston myself.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is when people argue about someone's spot on the card, the hard thing is none of us can affect it, right? I mean, really, you can say, well, the crowd, you know, elevated Daniel Bryan, but the reality is that we argue and get so passionate about this because someone else is making those decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, with the merchandising, the toys, the shirts, absolutely. I mean, the company kind of tells you who to root for.
They do. And yeah, I was thinking about this topic and jotting down some notes, and I wrote down, does Kofi versus Cena sell out WrestleMania 29? You know, and it just doesn't. He just doesn't have that star power to me. I don't think he's a great talker. I think he can be a solid WWE star for a long time, but I personally don't see him higher on the card.
Guys in the mid-card get the pickup checks, too. There's nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
TNA Impact, TNA Sacrifice pay-per-view received some critical acclaim. What does a quality wrestling show mean to you if you aren't excited about the matches going into the event? Sports have such an advantage here because you can watch a game between two teams you might not be interested in, but you can get sucked into the game. Professional wrestling, because the way it's structured, like a television show, half drama, half sports event, I don't feel myself really getting sucked into it. And I thought long and hard about what sucks people into professional wrestling. And what's funny is a lot of hardcore wrestling fans, they do get intrigued by the actual match quality. But if you talk to a lot of wrestling fans, what got them into it was actually an angle or a promo. Nothing to do with wrestling. They got sucked into a character. Do you have any thoughts on this, David?
Well, you're right about sports. I mean, sports has that unknown element. For example, tonight the Miami Heat got blown out by the Indiana Pacers, and Dwayne Wade was a no-show. I mean, played a terrible game tonight, and who'd have thought that? I mean, that's like going and seeing John Cena get pinned by the Brooklyn Brawler. You don't understand it. And that's the element of surprise in sports is, you know, so addicting, right? I mean, it's, you know, what's going to happen tonight on any given Sunday, that kind of thing. And wrestling, of course, being scripted, is never going to have that. But there is something to be said for TNA putting on a quality wrestling show that had good matches. Now, my question for you, though, is what's your definition of quality? Is it a good gate and they had a lot of ticket sales? Is it good matches? Is it critical acclaim? Because I think people could argue at that point.
You know, I guess it does determine what you speak of when you say quality. I mean, quality can be matches that you're invested in. I mean, you can get emotionally invested into a match. You can watch it that Sunday, and it may not be the best professional wrestling match in the world, but to you, it was a very important match, and you'll always remember it. WrestleMania's Macho Man Randy Savage versus Ultimate Warrior. Bad example. It was a great professional wrestling match, but I'll always remember the match more so than the moves that were contained inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Hogan Warrior, for example, another good professional wrestling match, but you'll always remember that match bigger than you'll remember the moves inside it. But then also there is quality wrestling, but I do know that people remember angles, storylines, interviews more so than they remember the matches.
Well, certainly WrestleMania 3 was the example that came to my mind where it had some legendary storylines and legendary characters. The wrestling outside of that Macho Dragon match is average. It's not great. But, I mean, certainly Hogan and Andre is nothing that you know, we should put in the vault. But it was a great storyline, and it was a great attraction. I think for TNA, this was a good show. And I think that we've talked about this on OWW Radio before. TNA has to think differently and be creative, but they still have to wrestle good matches, right? And I thought they did that here at the pay-per-view.
Absolutely. And then one thing about Macho Man, Ricky Dragon, Steamboat, it was a little bit before my time, but I always wondered, when I talked to a lot of fans from that era in 1987, they always bring up Ricky Steamboat having his throat crushed by Randy Savage in the ring bell. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that angle didn't happen, how people would have felt about the match. If it was just a good match on the undercard of WrestleMania 3. Well, I think a lot of people were anticipating it going in, and it delivered.
Well, people forget also that George Steele was in the corner of the Dragon, because George Steele had that big feud with Savage over Elizabeth for a year and a half, whatever it was. So there was a lot going on there.
Is Abyss Mick Foley of 2012? I know, blasphemous, right? It's hard for me to even say that out loud. Two guys that made their name going to the extreme. Now Chris Park has been allowed to show his verbal side. He's not Foley, I know, I understand. But I've really enjoyed his recent material. It's very interesting because Abyss was marketed as this monster. In fact, his nickname at one point was the Monster Abyss.
Mm-hmm.
And he was managed by James Vandenberg from WCW, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and a very good interview guy, and cut these awesome interviews for Abyss. Then Abyss was put by himself, and then eventually he was allowed to talk. And he did show good talking skills then, but it kind of diminished from the character because here's this monster that's talking, very similar to when they let Kane start talking.
Mm-hmm.
Now Abyss is playing two separate characters, his brother Chris Park and Abyss, and Chris Park has been some of the most entertaining stuff on the Impact Wrestling show, and it's very interesting that, you know, Mick Foley, and, you know, I hate the comparison because Mick Foley is an all-time legend, and I don't think we'll see Abyss get there. But the correlation between these guys who make a name by doing these extreme brutal matches, but then they're able to keep a name by their talking.
Well, I'm not sure I love yo-yoing characters like this, you know, where, like you said, you know, he was the Monster Abyss, and now he's talking and more eloquent, and he's just different, right?
Yes.
And once you go down that path, it's very hard then to circle around, I think, and go back. You know, I'm kind of glad George the Animal Steel never became, you know, a great promo guy. Because I always will remember him as ripping apart turnbuckles. I liked the Monster Abyss. I thought he had a good intensity, a good look. I know you say you enjoy what he's doing as a Chris Park character, but, you know, are they going down a path here, Alex, that you can't go back from?
That's a very good point. Potentially they are. I mean, we have to see where the storyline goes. I've heard different reports that they'll stay separated as two characters for the long future. It's something interesting that when you have these monsters in your company, that was the benefit of the 80s and the territory system, is that you could send these monsters elsewhere. George the Animal Steel, for example, was a school teacher for most of the year. During the summers, he came to WWF, and then he went back to being a school teacher. So he was able to come in for part of the summer and then leave, where Abyss has to stay there every week, and you have to do things to freshen up the characters.
It's tough to be a booker because you got to put a lot of material out there.
Absolutely. You have a lot of different people to answer to. You know, in the state of professional wrestling, I won't say it's the best that it's ever been, but I'll say these guys producing this television have an incredibly hard job that I don't think fans oftentimes understand. They have a lot of bosses to please.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you don't have 100 guys on your roster. I mean, you got a bunch of guys that, you know, are on there, and a few of them you really trust to wrestle a good match or to be the face of the promotion, and Abyss can work, and I guess, you know, they're trying to get every bit of talent out of him. He's good at what he does as a Chris Park character. It's an interesting discussion. I'm glad we're having this tonight, because at the end of the day, I don't know if I like it. I think I like him more in that, you know, the mysterious, the monster, destroying things, even though he does have the skills here to carry this.
You know, in one part I absolutely agree with you, but in the second part I'd say that, I mean, Chris Parks has been with the company for a long time now, and I mean, we've seen him go from good guy to bad guy to I'm struggling between good and bad. I mean, we've seen many evolutions of the Abyss character.
Yeah.
And then I would like to say that I give kudos to TNA to trying something different. Sometimes it's very hard when you're in a creative position to try something different.
No question, and we've talked about some of their upcoming programming changes. They have to think outside the box. They've done it with some of the upcoming types of shows that they are going to program, and here we're seeing an example of doing it even within the show with one of their characters. So you're right. I agree with you on that.
Absolutely. I mean, when people turn on TNA Impact Wrestling, they have to get the feeling they're watching a different show, and right or wrong, this is the way you do it, is by doing different ideas. Robert Roode is closing in on becoming TNA's longest reigning champion. Has his title reign been good or bad for the company? I was asking myself this question all day today and looking up different things to try to justify whether I felt he was a good or a bad champion. And overall, what's interesting is that I think that in his role, he has been a good champion. He's produced good matches on pay-per-view. I watched his promo tonight on the show. He's a very good interview in the ring. Since his haircut, which a lot of people didn't like, but yeah. Since his haircut, he looks like a champion wrestler. I mean, before his haircut, he kind of looked like a, I don't know, almost like a throwback 80s wrestler. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but now he looks like a professional champion. Mm-hmm. I like it. But, you know, all this reading and all these different things that I did, when you talk about long-reigning champions, it's hard not to go back to WWF. I mean, when you think long-reigning champions, you think Bruno, you think Pedro Morales. And Bobby Roode, if you put him in WWF today, and I hope this doesn't insult anyone, but, I mean, I see him being a Dolph Ziggler.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you don't see him at the same spot in the other company?
Absolutely not. I mean, for this company, for this company, they have to elevate their guys. And if their guys, Bobby Roode is the best one of their guys. I mean, he's very good in the ring, has a good look. I very much enjoy him, but I know I'm evading my own question. I think he has been a good champion. I think they should do long title reigns. Because eventually, the point is, eventually when you beat a guy, you want it to matter. But, man, after looking at all this stuff, I just kept thinking, like, man, I feel like if Robert Roode was in the other company, he would just be Dolph Ziggler.
Well, I don't like hot-shotting titles. I like when champions have belts for a while for exactly the point you just said. I want a title change to mean something. So, that being said, I think it's been good for the company. Listen, he's not Ric Flair and Sting in this case, and that's a good thing. Because it is somebody new. You know, they're trying to elevate somebody here, and it's going to take time to see him in that main event status. Because like you said, you place him in the other company, you don't think he's at that level. But I'm okay with it. Like I said, I don't like hot-shotting titles. I like the belt on him here, and I hope they keep it on it because I want it to mean something when he loses it. But I want to ask you this. What in your mind is a quote-unquote good champion? The Honky Tonk Man was Intercontinental Champion for over a year. I thought he was an unbelievably exciting champion because he was always the weasel who got out of trouble. But by no means was he a good wrestler.
You know, people from my era, I mean, I remember Sting as being the world champion, but he may not have had the effect on the purchases of money coming into the company like a Ric Flair did. Ultimately, I think a champion has to gain interest for his title defenses. What I find interesting lately is that any time a title defense is belt up well, people want the title to change, and they get very disappointed when it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's good or bad. I mean, I don't know really what to say about that. I mean, if you don't build up a title match well, then no one's interested. But if you build it up too well, then people want to see the change. And fans get disappointed when they don't see the change. So very interesting place they put themselves.
Wild card topic number one. CM Punk and Daniel Bryan have a history together in ROH, and do you think that the WWE should exploit all the histories of their wrestlers? They got a big match this weekend at Over the Limit, and a lot of people are buzzing about it. Do you think that the WWE should use the history as part of their actual storylines?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you and I discussed this on another radio show, I think we did in the past, that you hit all levels of fans. And if you can give a little wink and a nod to the hardcore fans by saying, yeah, we will acknowledge these two guys did have a couple of matches in Ring of Honor, it makes those fans happy, and the fans that don't get it don't get it. So I think they should do it.
Absolutely. Alex, why not take advantage of it? It's built-in storylines. It's built-in layers. You were just talking earlier in the show about people remember storylines. They remember angles. They don't remember the moves within a match. Well, here you go. What a fantastic story between these two. You have the history in the WWE and what they've done with them the last couple weeks. And they've done a good job, you know, obviously with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk the past year. But you have this great history. Why not incorporate it? It's already been written for you.
Just like the story of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson starts with Michigan State versus Indiana State.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the more you can put into the pot to tell the story, the better hopefully the story can be. So absolutely, I mean, these guys have a history. I mean, that was upsetting to a lot of fans is that they denied us of the history by changing these guys' names when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Danielson became Daniel Bryan. Michael McGillicuddy, Kurt Hennig's son, had to change his name. they've done it so many times where they've kind of, you know, we understand you have a history, but we're going to sweep it away. And for them to acknowledge the history that happened in other companies is very refreshing, and I like it.
I like it, too. By the way, if I got hired by WWE, they could call me whoever they want. You know, I mean, we get all wrapped up in that, the name changes. You know what? The cash, the check clears, you know, right? I mean, Daniel Bryan, they can call him whatever you want. He's a big star right now, and he's going to have a great match, hopefully, on Sunday with someone he has obviously had great matches with in the past. Now, when we talked about Over the Limit earlier, we didn't touch on this match specifically, but this is a match I would pay to see. I just don't know if it is enough for me to buy the whole show.
Absolutely. I mean, while Daniel Bryan continues, I think, to be in the best segments on SmackDown, he hasn't really been protected as a challenger should be. It's obvious he's not winning the title on Sunday, and they've had really good wrestling matches on SmackDown and Raw just a few months ago. So I really don't understand what the hook of this match is other than the fact they're having a pay-per-view match.
Do you think it's just to cement Bryan as a heel? They want to make sure that the fans are reacting to him in the right way?
It could have been a reshuffling of the plans. Maybe Punk requested to work with him.
Yeah, well, so we'll see. I mean, I do like the fact that there is history here, and I think that in general, WWE should definitely use it, as should other companies as well. If TNA has someone come in, why ignore it? And the last point that I wrote down here was nobody's a threat to WWE, so by admitting that they came from another promotion, it's not like people are going to flock in droves to this other promotion and they're going out of business.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think Ring of Honor could show any influx of new people buying their DVDs or looking at their television products from WWE mentioning them. I mean, they're going to get stray fans here or there, but not enough to make a difference. I mean, WWE used to show Ultimate Fighting Championship footage on their shows when Ken Shamrock was a member of the company. That's actually how I became a fan, but UFC at the time still didn't have very many people watching it, so it's not going to make that big of an effect. Wild card topic number two. Speaking of Ring of Honor, their last iPay-per-view had technical malfunctions that did not allow fans to view the show. How big of a blow is this to the company? Now, Ring of Honor is a company that I've watched since its inception. It's known for having some of the best wrestling matches in America on a consistent basis. They moved to the new iPay-per-view format, and then in April, their WrestleMania weekend shows called Showdown the Sun. They were using a company on Go Fight Live and had technical issues both nights. And then they decided to go to their website for this latest pay-per-view. A lot of people couldn't even log into the website to order it. A lot of people had pre-ordered it, couldn't log into the website to view it. Bad, bad. And so everyone that's ordered it, they've said that they can have the June pay-per-view for free. I didn't order the pay-per-view. I expected problems because these iPay-per-views, while I think they're going to be great in the future, the first initial ones from a company are always real clunky, and I usually wait a couple before I order iPay-per-view. They're at a really good price point, $10 to $15, and if you're a wrestling fan, you can hook your laptop with an HDMI cable to your TV. I think it's a great, great thing, but I'm not ordering the June pay-per-view. For the people who are getting it for free, they're going to get it for free. I see this June pay-per-view bombing real bad, and it's unfortunate because, like I said, they are a good wrestling company.
Yeah, they are. And when I saw this was going to be a topic tonight, the first thing I wrote down was yuck. I mean, you can't do it. You can't do this if you're a Ring of Honor. You can't do this if you're a promotion trying to make it. Makes you look second rate. You just can't. You can't have these kind of technical difficulties. You could argue the wrestling isn't good. You know, a promotion can keep trying to better the stars or the matches and keep working the angles. But when the technical issues are this severe that I paid money to log in to watch a show and it kicked me out or I had these issues, boy, that looks second rate, and I don't know if I'm giving it a second chance. That's, to me, a more overriding problem than, gee, I didn't like the way that match finished.
You know, what's very interesting is fans have a lot more options on their plate than what they did just 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you cannot provide an iPay-per-view product that's going to work on a consistent basis, I mean, it's to the point now where it's fool me once and I'm done.
Yeah.
There's NBA playoffs on right now. There's Major League Baseball. There's so many other entertainment avenues that I can go enjoy besides trying to wait for your company to provide a product that works.
Here's the thing. First of all, being on internet for pay-per-view makes you look second-rate anyway. Now, I understand why they do it. I get it, and that's fine. And if they put on a great show, they'll certainly keep their fans, and that's wonderful. But that's not the big time as it is. Secondly, this is not 1995 where the internet is new technology. Nothing should be clunky anymore for a company that wants people to pay for material on the internet.
I do believe that, I mean, internet pay-per-view, it's not going to be the wave of the future for your World Wrestling Entertainment, even though now they're putting opening matches on YouTube. But I actually think it's excellent for a company like Ring of Honor, who most of their fans are on the internet, but statistics Dave Meltzer from Wrestling Observer said today is that they actually, when they were on terrestrial pay-per-view, they actually had 10,000 buys, as to where now they're lucky if they do, you know, 1,500 to 1,000.
Hmm.
So it's, while they do have a hardcore all-internet audience, not all of them buy the iPay-per-views. I'm interested to see where this thing goes in the future, because it's pure profit to the company. It has a lot of advantages. I think it's something definitely to look at in the future.
Blast from the past. Now, recently on CAC Radio, I had the privilege of interviewing the original Mr. Wonderful of professional wrestling. No, not Paul Orndorff. We're talking about Rock Riddle, wrestler who was famous in the 70s and then made a successful transition from pro wrestler to movie star to producer. He's still very active in pro wrestling and has a company that helps movie stars market themselves. Alex, this was a really fun interview, because if you've never listened to Rock Riddle speak, it is a real treat. This guy, I tell you, the first 30 minutes of the interview, I asked one question. I mean, he just took it and ran with it. But what's interesting, though, is he comes from the old school, you know, where if you want to be a pro wrestler, you go into a territory and you start working, and they stretch you and they break bones, and if you come back, you can, you gain the respect, and then you go around the country and around the world getting to be a better wrestler. You know, anytime you talk to these guys who went through that territory system, it's so interesting the difference between how wrestlers are trained today, right?
Absolutely. You know, one thing about Rock Riddle, when I hear the name, it makes me think, is that I ran into him a couple times in Southern California. I was introduced to him as Rock Riddle, a professional wrestler from the 70s. Wasn't very familiar with him at all, to be honest. But if I met Kofi Kingston in a space, I wouldn't know he was anyone famous. But when you meet Rock Riddle, you may not know what he does, but he comes across as someone that's important. That's something a lot of professional wrestlers today can learn.
Well, when we were speaking with him, we were talking about the importance of a plan B, of, you know, if wrestling doesn't work out, get your education so you have something to fall back on. And he said, no, he disagrees with that. He said, yeah, he did. He said, there's no plan B. He said, for me, I was going to be a pro wrestler, and I was going to do whatever it takes to be a pro wrestler. There was no plan B. He said, in his philosophy, and I'm not saying I agree with it, but his philosophy was, if you're giving yourself a plan B, that's what you're going to end up doing. So, and look, and my point back to him was, well, it's very difficult to get to the level he got to, where he's, you know, main eventing arenas all over the country. It was an interesting discussion. Check it out on CAC Radio. It'll be posted this weekend. Rock Riddle, like you said it best, someone who just comes across as important, because he really was. He was a big star in the 70s. You know, he was telling stories how he was weightlifting with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno, and he's been in a ton of movies. He was in The Gong Show for a bunch of episodes. A real character, a real treasure to the history of professional wrestling. Go to his website, HollywoodSuccess.com. Check out Rock Riddle's bio. It is a real good read. Now, Alex, this is normally when we sign off, but do you mind if I get something off my chest?
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned the NBA playoffs, and you and I love talking basketball. I've been watching a ton of games. I'm still disappointed that my Grizzlies lost in seven. But more disappointing has been the injuries that we've seen. Derrick Rose, Chris Bosh, they affect series, they affect franchises, and more than anything else, it brings the fans down. You know, even if you're a Sixers fan, you wanted to see Derrick Rose in that series. The Miami Heat got blown out tonight. They're not the same without Chris Bosh. Injuries just stink for fans. I know it happens to teams, and it alters careers, it alters seasons, but when you get these kind of injuries, it just is depressing. I feel bad. You know, I'm a big Cowboys fan back in the 90s. I mean, the whole Dallas dynasty was impacted by the injuries to Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin. And it's just a shame. So I hope Derrick Rose can come back healthy. We are seeing how important Chris Bosh is to the Miami Heat. And I just hope going forward that we don't have any more injuries to anyone like Kobe or LeBron. They need to be on the court, because they're a lot of fun to watch.
You know, so I read something today that actually frustrated me a lot, too. It's Alabama signed a highly talented high school quarterback. We're both big sports fans, but seriously, I mean, we've kind of intruded on the college lives of a lot of children already. Do we need to go into their high school life? I mean, when's it start? Are we going to start scouting junior high kids now. You know, once a kid goes to college, okay, he's fair ground now. Leave the high school kids alone. I mean, if he develops into something, he develops into something. But seriously, guys. I mean, they bring cameras to these kids' houses when they sign their letters of intent. And is an 18, 17-year-old really ready for that kind of stardom before he's even done anything on a real football field? I mean, name me a high school football coach, but I can name you hundreds of college football coaches.
Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all the program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Radio Facebook homepage. By the way, Alex, what's your Twitter handle? People can follow you as well.
My Twitter and Facebook is AlexGoff84. Pretty simple. GOFF84.
Okay, and I've never given up mine. Mine's DLB19338. That's DLB19338. Follow us on Twitter if you want, and every now and again we say something kind of funny. So, Edison, until next time, I am David.
And I'm Alex.
We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Okay. Let me turn the Skype recorder off.